Welcome to Mormon Expression Voices. My name is Katrine, and today on this beautiful day, we're here with Dave. Welcome, Dave. Thanks for coming to talk with us.
Thanks for having me.
Dave, where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Salt Lake.
Okay. Was your family strong in Mormon faith?
Yeah. My parents were really strong in the faith. My dad was an Elders Quorum president. Since I've moved out, he's been a branch president. My mom, primary president, Relief Society president, all that sort of thing. So yeah.
So all you've known is the Mormon upbringing.
Yeah.
Okay. And would you describe it as happy in your childhood?
Yeah, I would. I was really lucky. I had good parents. I was the oldest of five, three younger brothers and a younger sister. And, we lived in a nice neighborhood, nice people around us. I love my ward growing up. Still have a lot of good memories of my ward and the people there and the experiences I had there. And it's something that it was a good experience for me growing up for the most part.
Well, good. And how was it once you became a teenager and started the young men's program in scouting?
I was lucky. Really, really lucky. I had really good young men's leaders, really great scout leaders. Our scout, the scout master for most of the time I was in scouts he was a geologist, a scientist, and would take us out and, really just talk to us about how the world was and, made you think about things. It made, really made you look at things and, great outdoorsmen. So we would do some great things and, outside and, great hikes, great wilderness adventures and things like that. It was a neat experience. It was a good, a good support network and a lot of really great people that were, gave a lot of their time and their efforts and, something I'm really appreciative of.
Nice. And I imagine being the oldest of five children, it was probably a lot of pressure for you to serve a mission.
Yeah, it was. There was pressure, but it was just something that was just kind of, I didn't really think about it. I didn't really internalize a lot of pressure. It was just something that you did. It was just, that's just what was going to happen and it was what I was expecting. I had a good childhood growing up and, but I had some problems. One thing I wanted to talk about, I did have some problems, growing up with pornography and things like that. I think a lot of people go through that. Of course, when I was young, it didn't make a lot of sense, but sometimes it felt like I was the only person that had that kind of problem. Especially in the church, it felt like, there was something wrong with me or there was something that was, that was hard to deal with. It was something that I think really caused a lot of problems for me growing up and made me just deal with things in a lot of unhealthy ways. It was something where my parents were really worried about it. My parents, they would have me, because I grew up, I was a smart kid. I did well in school, to a degree, but, my mom always tells a story. She would go to parent-teacher conference and, she would get there and the teacher would rave about, Dave's so smart, he's doing well and everything like that. And they break open their grade book and he's like, oh, he hasn't turned in, half of his assignments or just, it was something where it was just, I had a hard time really focusing and following through and things like that. My parents were really good about trying to get me the help that I needed and, saw a lot of counselors, tried some medications and things like that. I was dealing with depression and things like that. A lot of what they knew and were taught, in the church or growing up, was counterproductive to really helping with the problems I was having. It was, I remember one instance that in particular that really stood out to me was, my mom, took me up to see a counselor. It was actually up at the, I can't remember exactly where it was. I think it was up at the University of Utah through their counseling program up there or something, but saw this gentleman and, things were going really well. It seemed helpful in the session. My mom was there with me. It was probably, like 15 at the time. Just talking about, things and problems and things I was dealing with school and, and focusing on things like that. And towards the end, she mentions like, well, yeah, Dave's, he's got a problem with pornography and, does these things and, can you help me with that? And, the guy was just like, he's like, well, that's pretty normal for, for someone this age. You know, you want to make sure it doesn't get out of control or anything like that. But it's not something that's, you know, it's not something that's unusual, or it's not something that's, you know, he's not abnormal, basically. I mean, that's what I got from it. And it was, you know, in that moment, it was just really, I really remember that, and that it just was like, wow, you know, for that moment, I thought, oh, you know, it was just such a relief to just kind of feel like, oh, you know, this is okay. You know, this is something that's, you know, that's not normal or unusual. And my mom shut that down right away and just said, it's like, well, we don't believe that. Basically, I'm paraphrasing what she said, but it was just, you know, that moment of just like, oh, you know, that finally it was, you know, somebody was just, you know, telling me it's like, oh, you know, you're okay. And then it was just kind of like, nope. You know, that rug was just kind of pulled out from underneath me. And that was hard. My mom was awesome. She was like the ultimate homemaker, sewing, cooking. I mean, she was just great at all that sort of thing. You know, just a super Mormon mom in a lot of ways. But she had a lot of problems with depression and things when I was growing up. She kind of had a short fuse for a while. And, you know, I think that kind of contributed to a lot of the problems that I was having because, you know, the problems that I was having with the pornography and just, you know, I started overeating and things like that too. You know, nothing super serious, but I mean, at that age, my metabolism didn't really make too much of a difference, but, you know, I was hiding food and things like that. And just a lot of, I was always so worried about getting her upset. I hated getting her upset or getting her mad at us. You know, she was never really physically abusive or anything like that with us, but, you know, it was just something where I really felt this need to hide, and to not really talk about my feelings and things like that. You know, that really just made the problem worse because it fed into the shame and the embarrassment of it all. And I couldn't really talk to anybody about it. And, you know, it just kind of perpetuated the cycle of, you know, just that I just felt like I was stuck in and couldn't get out of.
Yeah. I certainly don't want to be negative towards your mother, cause I'm sure she was doing the best she could. But when,
oh yeah,
when she's has a doctor that's saying this is normal behavior and she's, no, it's not, then you do feel that need to hide things from her.
Yeah.
You don't want your mom to think you're abnormal.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That was, you know, and that was just one instance, and it was just, It felt like there was, you know, this pornography and everything, you know, this industry and everything was built up for the bad people. I always had this kind of, you know, I think you get this a lot in Mormonism, of kind of us versus them, good versus evil. And it was, you know, it was like, this is something that's for the bad people. If I'm dealing with this, if I'm, you know, if I'm having problems with this, then I'm a bad person. I'm not, felt very much like I didn't fit in with who I was supposed to be as, you know, as a Mormon growing up.
Were you ever inclined to confess to the bishop?
Yeah, I did. I don't think he was really equipped to deal with it. Remember one bishop, and I think there was one bishop that was my bishop for most of my teen years, and I kind of got the impression that he'd rather just not even, you know, talk about it. I didn't get the message. It's like, oh, this is okay. It's just kind of like, it's just laying in the lake. Why are you bothering me with this? Almost, you know, he didn't come out and say that, but that's how I felt about it. And it was just kind of, I think he was trying to just let me know that it's like, you know, it's like, you're not the only one or anything like that. But in a way it was bad, because it just made me feel like, you know, he doesn't even want to talk to me about this. You know, it's just, you know, something I should be embarrassed of or ashamed of and have problems with. I mean, it's hard for me to sit and talk about it now. You know, it was hard anytime I would confess or anything like that to anything or, you know, talk to my parents at all about it was just very hard to do. You know, it still is. There's still a lot of embarrassment and shame tied up with it.
I know all about shame. You're in good company.
Yeah, I've found a lot. That's one thing I like about the ex-Mormon community that I've found since we've kind of been leaving the churches. It's like there's a lot of people that relate to that and that, you know, have, you know, similar kind of experiences growing up of just, you know, those same feelings.
Did your pornography problem continue on? Well, problem, if you want to call it that. Did that continue on into when you became a missionary?
Yeah, it did. I would kind of fight it for a while. I ended up serving a mission. Really, I had a great mission experience.
Where did you go?
California. It was a Vietnamese-speaking mission. It was really, which was really kind of unique because, I lived in the same apartment the full 2 years I was there. There was one branch in our mission. So, you know, I was with, it was neat. It was, you know, I was working with the same people, became really close to some people. I was with my trainer for like the first 6 months I was there. And then even, you know, there were four of us missionaries. And if we got switched companions, we would just switch bedrooms basically. And, we all lived in the same apartment. And so, I was lucky. I look back and, I hear other people's stories about their missions or their life growing up and their leaders and things like that or their bishops they had. And I just think it's like, I was really pretty lucky because my trainer was just awesome. I think he just got released as a bishop. He's just really, and just a genuinely, just caring, just a genuinely good person. And it's good to have that because, I hear a lot of stories or knew other missionaries where it's like, if I would have been stuck with one of them, it would have been, I could see it being, the opposite experience. So.
Yeah, I can see how if you have time to have those relationships on a mission, it would be beneficial unless it was with somebody that you couldn't stand, then it would be a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting that when I came out, there were actually six of us for about 2 weeks because the way things were, we kind of overlapped with the two missionaries that were leaving that we were replacing when I went out. And remember one of them saying we were at a dinner appointment, all of us, and somebody said, well, what happens if you don't get along because of our situation being? And he says, oh, we get along. You know, that's just,
there's no choice.
I really learned that because, I had other companions that there was one that I was with for almost a year and a half that was out with me. And, at first we didn't get along. It was a good experience to really kind of work past that instead of just thinking it's like, if I can just deal with this guy for another, month or so, one of us is going to get transferred. And it was good to kind of, have to work on that and not just think, just have to wait this out.
That's interesting. I've never heard of a mission like that.
Yeah, it was neat. The people we met were amazing. It was amazing. I always wanted to serve in a foreign country. So when I got my call at first, I was disappointed, but we would go on splits with the Spanish speaking missionaries. We met people from all over the world. Just some incredible experiences that they had. I mean, a lot of these, the Vietnamese people that we were working with were, they'd been through the war and, a lot of them had been, in prison camps after the war and things like that and just told some just incredible and horrible stories. And it just made you really grateful for what you have and it really made me appreciate the fact that our country lets these people come in and gives them a chance at a better life. And they were so appreciative of that. And really, it was a neat experience. And I'm lucky, it's something even now that I'm out of the church, I don't, obviously I wouldn't go on a mission again because I just don't believe in what I was teaching, but I don't regret going. I don't feel like it was a waste of 2 years. It was a good experience. I learned a lot, not just about church, but about just about people and about, it was good to hear about all the stuff that these people have been through and really made me more appreciative for what I have.
Good. That's nice to hear. So you come home from your mission.
Mm-hmm.
And did you move back in with your parents?
Yeah, I moved back in with my parents, started going to school. Had a hard time with school. I took some early morning classes and since I've been married, I've been diagnosed with sleep apnea and done some things to kind of help with that, which was just incredible because I was basically just, I wasn't getting good sleep ever. So, dealing with that has been huge in helping me, function a lot better because, back then it was like I would, get up to go to class in the morning. I just, had a hard time even just getting out of bed or, it was just kind of the same situation from growing up where, it's like I would do well on the test, but I would, I'd miss assignments or just, not study enough, things like that. And so, it actually took me a while to graduate. I dropped out for a few years, after I got married and it was just a struggle for me. It was hard and I felt guilty about it because I was a smart kid. I always, I knew the stuff. I just couldn't really do it at that point.
And when did you meet your wife?
I met my wife, when I was going to school. I was going to the University of Utah, actually moved out of my parents' house at one point and moved into her, student ward. I dated a couple of her roommates and I thought she was out of my league. I thought she was just, but you know, just got to know her, you know, was hanging around her place, hanging around her apartment a lot, just really got to know her and finally, asked her out. And, you know, it was great because we really became really good friends first before we even started, even considered starting to date. And so it was nice to have that. And she's still, I mean, she's still my best friend. She's, you know, people say that, but it's really, you know, in our case, it's great. You know, we can talk about things. She's interesting. She's fun. She's funny. She's just great to be with. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that and I love her.
Nice. She'll like this when she hears it. And I guess she was strong LDS.
Yeah. 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 Her family was, you know, raised her strong LDS and, she grew up in a good LDS family. Her parents were, they had some financial troubles, growing up, and she kind of bounced around a bit and just kind of felt out of place with that. And just, she really is just always kind of felt like she didn't fit in church. Like she was, you know, like there was something wrong with her. You know, there just wasn't a place for her because she didn't fit in to, you know, whereas like I said, my mom was the, you know, the typical Mormon housemaker and all that. You know, my wife was just really, recognizes that growing up or when she was, you know, when we were first married, but she just.
She wasn't inclined to be a stay-at-home mom. Is that what you mean?
No, she wasn't. I mean, she loves our kids. She's a great mom, but you know, even now she works. She tried not working for a little while and tried working at home for a little while when our first daughter was born. She just got really depressed. She got depressed. She gained weight. She just felt, you know, she just needs, you know, it's good for her to just get out and work. I mean, she needs that. And she's, like I said, she's an incredible mom. You know, our girls just absolutely love her. She's really good with them. They're good. They're happy kids, but she needs to work. And, you know, and of course, I think for a lot of Mormon women, there's a lot of guilt tied up with that of just feeling like it's like, well, you know, I should be able to stay home with my daughter that I love and just love it and just, you know, have a beautiful, wonderful, you know, happy experience. And it wasn't working for her. No, it didn't work for her.
Well, it sounds like you were supportive in her decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
Not so much.
You know, I look back at the early part of our life and so much it was just kind of it's like we were just kind of floating along, just trying to do what we were supposed to do, but not really being very good at it and not really, you know, with me dropping out of school and things like that, that was hard. She was actually, she said it was okay to talk about this, but she had a bad experience, right before we met. She was raped by a guy she was dating and she blamed herself. Which is horrible. She was on pain medication for, you know, a back injury and he took advantage of her. But she thought it's like, well, you know, it's still, you know, I shouldn't have, she blamed herself and that, you know, said that it was thought that it was her fault. And she dropped out of school. She had a full ride scholarship. You know, she did great in high school, really bright, works really hard at school. But she just dropped out and, you know, looking back, it's like, I should have thought to say like, well, what's going on? You know, I should have dug a little deeper or asked some questions, you know, why aren't you doing that? But, you know, in my head, I'm just thinking, it's like, well, you know, okay, it's, you know, she's going to be the mom. I'm going to be the breadwinner and that's so how it's going to be.
Did you know her at the time of the rape happening?
It's like, I think we figured that I just barely first met her when that happened.
Okay. And I feel like we should give her a name.
Oh, yeah, Jill.
Jill. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, that's okay. She has an important story. So I'd like to have her name.
Yeah, she does.
So you just met her probably about that same time that was happening. So you watched her life kind of spiral downward for a while.
Yeah. She always seemed happy and things like that. And you know, I didn't really recognize it. She didn't, you know, and I didn't know her that well. So I didn't, it was hard to tell, but you know, yeah, after that happened, she had a lot of anxiety, She couldn't, physically couldn't go to class and she stopped going. She completely stopped going to class and things like that. She ended up having, her GPA ended up, by the time she finally just dropped out, her GPA was a 1.0, which is not good.
Especially if you had a full ride scholarship.
Yeah.
It's quite a difference.
Yeah. And so she beat herself up about that a lot and, you know, but like I said, it was something where I didn't even, I didn't even think to question it. It was just kind of like, well, this is, you know, this is how it's supposed to be. And she didn't even really recognize that she needed to call it rape, that's what had happened to her until probably like 5 years ago or so.
Oh,
And she's been amazing. She's really been amazing. She's gone back to school. She's going to school right now. She takes classes online. She's been getting straight A's, just doing incredibly. She got a lot of those old grades dropped, which was a hard process, and having to kind of relive that experience over and over again. And it's just been amazing in our lives. It's been so good for her. It's been so, and it's hard. We've got, you know, right now we've got she went back when our youngest, who's, she'll be three in a couple of months, but she started going back when she was just a few months old. And then we have another one, another little one who was just turning two at that point. He's four now. And so we've got two, our oldest daughter's 12. We've got the three girls and, yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's crazy. And,
big workload.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's working part time still. And, you know, I try to help out and juggle things, and it's hard, but sometimes it's just, she's just stressed out, and it's hard, and it's crazy. And, as you can imagine, but at the same time, she's changed. I mean, it's really changed her. She's got so much more confidence. She's got so much more ability. She stands up for herself. She doesn't let people push her around.
Well, and, good job, Jill. Keep it up.
Yeah. No, she's really amazing. She's really, a neat example to me. You know, that's something I probably should mention too, is my mom growing up, like I said, she was always, had a short fuse and was short with us. I mean, I had great parents. I mean, I hear stories about some people's parents that are just, just horrific, some of the things they did. So it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but she's really changed as well. And my mom actually, before my wife went back to school, my mom went back to school and got her degree. And it's just been amazing to see how that's changed her and just the confidence that's given her. And, and that's something when I look at my girls, that's been a big thing about us with us leaving the church, is I don't want my girls to internalize the messages that they can get from church. They don't always get them, but it's just kind of a crapshoot. It's, as to what their young women's leaders are going to tell them, or what they're going to, what they're going to really pick up on and latch onto. And it's, I don't want them to feel like they've got this one path that they need to follow, that they need to be a stay at home mom, or they need to do, they need to support their husband or things like that. I want them to be who they want to be and do what they want to do, because I've just seen, with my mom and my wife especially, I've seen how it's just really changed them to really, just not, just live their lives for themselves and not living for something else or mm-hmm. for someone else.
Yeah, I can see how that would be important, especially with three little girls that you're raising. So you mentioned that you went back to school and you finished. What did you get a degree in?
Yeah, I got a degree in business management. And then I actually, I graduated, I think, there's my mission in there too, but it was, I think, like 11 years after I graduated from high school. I graduated from college with my degree. And then, I was doing all right and doing well and enjoying it, and ended up going to law school in Denver. So, I graduated from law school in 2010, which was, it was still hard, and it was still, it was a struggle. I still didn't get the greatest grades, but, I made it through it, and I learned a lot, and I enjoy it.
Well, good for you, especially since it took 11 years to get one degree, and then you finished up law school at the tail end there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it felt good. It felt good to kind of, be able to do that after just kind of zoning out and feeling like a failure. It felt good to accomplish that. It's nice to feel like I'm taking control of my life again.
Great. And you came back to Utah.
Came back to Utah. Yeah. And that was a big thing when, as far as us leaving the church, I think that was kind of a big catalyst to it. We came back to Utah and it was weird. Utah's weird. I mean, we love it. We love it here, but it was, you know, it was just interesting having left and living someplace else for a while and then coming back and just looking at it and thinking, oh, this is, you know, this is, I've always had a problem with a lot of Mormon culture. You know, especially the way women are treated. It's been huge having three girls, and I look at my life experiences and I want my girls to have some of the good experiences that I had. You know, there were some negative things. There's some negative things I learned from church and things like that. But I think it's like, oh, I want my girls to have these experiences. But then the more that I look at it, and the more that I listen to people and see what other people experience, it's just like, they're not, you know, as women in the church, they're not going to have those same experiences. There's just no way.
Can you give some examples?
Yeah. You know, one thing kind of get to that. I started learning things about church history and, you know, things that I had, you know, the typical things of just the accuracy of the Book of Mormon. Was it really, you know, translated and, you know, started to, you know, the Joseph Smith polygamy, it's just all the typical stuff. I don't want to get into a lot of that because it's, you know, it was, and finally just kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, the church wasn't necessarily true, whatever that really means. It's been probably about 3 years ago now where I kind of came to that conclusion. And but I got to that point and I thought, you know what? I still, you know, it's such a huge, I mean, my ancestors were pioneers. It's just a huge part of my life. And it's something that, you know, I think was a good experience for me. And I, you know, I want that for my family. And I want to hold on to that. And, you know, about that time, I started going on the blogosphere reading, you know, I love Feminist Mormon Housewives and that blog and things like that. And I went to, and joined, the Feminist Mormon Housewives group on Facebook. Started listening to what people were saying there, and it was just amazing. And it was, you know, I kind of decided early on, you know, people say something, I was like, oh, I have an answer for this, or, you know, I can, you know, I can help these women out or something like that. And I kind of decided early on though that was really not the way to approach it, and just to stop and listen, to just really listen more than, you know, try to contribute and try to answer everybody's problems and things like that. That I think that was the best thing I ever done, because growing up in the church, as men, we don't listen to women. We don't have to listen to women. Turn 12, you're a deacon, and, you know, as soon as you're out of the primary, you're, you know, none of your leaders are women. None of your, you might have a Sunday school teacher that's a woman, or, you know, and yeah, you have to listen to your mom or things like that. Or, you know, when you're married, you have to listen to your wife to some degree.
But, you know what's good for you.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, you don't really struck me that, you know, it's like I never listened to women. I remember when I was young, going through my music. I didn't have a big CD collection or anything like that, but I remember realizing it's like, it's all male artists. You know, so I mean, literally, I wasn't listening, you know, even just kind of an example, but it's, you know, I wasn't listening to women's voices at all, you know, in any way in my life. And
I'd never thought of it that way, that once you leave primary, you really have no women leaders. And as a woman, as a young woman, you have your women leaders, but you also have the bishop and you also have the counselors that come in and advise you from time to time. And you have to go in for interviews with the man, with the bishop.
Yeah.
But as young men, you don't have that interaction. I'd never thought of that before.
Yeah. And kind of get back to what we were talking about. When I decided the church wasn't true, I still wanted my girls to have that experience. But then I started listening to these women on this Facebook group and elsewhere, listening to my wife and what she had to say about what had happened to her growing up and the problems that she's had with the church and things like that. And, you know, it was sad. I finally came to the conclusion that it's like, my girls aren't going to have the good experience that I had. It's going to be different for them, and it's just not possible for them to have that. That was hard. And that's kind of the time when my wife and I, probably about 7 or 8 months ago, decided we're just going to stop going to church.
Okay. But it sounds like it wasn't such a quick decision. Was it Mormon history that pushed you that way more, or was it the feminist roles in the church that pushed you?
You know, really, it's like it's two different things. There, you know, as far as it was Mormon history and all that made me stop believing in the church as being true. But it was the feminism, it was gay rights issues and things like that was a big one too, that, you know, made me just feel like I don't want to be a part of this organization anymore. There was when I stopped believing, and then when I decided I was just not, I didn't want to be a part of the church anymore. We haven't taken our names off the records yet. I don't know if we'll do that or not. That's, yeah, I think there's a lot tied up in that, obviously, but, mm-hmm. and our ward's left us alone so far, pretty much. So.
Okay. And was your wife on the same trip as you with?
Yeah. Your yeah. Belief? Yeah. We've been really fortunate because, yeah, there's a lot of people that we know that haven't been on it. And it's hard. It's a hard experience. It's a hard thing to go through. And I can't imagine going through it without her, but yeah, we've really kind of, you know, for a while when, you know, I was learning some of the stuff about church history, you know, there was a message board we were on that we were both on together and where some of this stuff was talked about. And, you know, so we're like, oh, did you hear about this? It was just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, we didn't, it was very superficial. We weren't really like, oh, you know, it's like, this is really disturbing. It's just kind of like, oh, did you hear about this? It's like, oh yeah. And, you know, it wasn't until, probably a year or so ago where we really started just really talking about stuff and like, yeah, you know, this is kind of disturbing to us, or we don't, you know, we don't like this or don't agree with this or don't believe this. Yeah. We've really done it, you know, hand in hand. And okay. that's been incredible. We're really lucky, really lucky.
Good. And how did your families take it? Do they know of your change?
I told my parents a couple of months ago, just really briefly. I've been working on, we were having dinner over their house and just helping them clean up or something afterwards and just kind of dropped it on them. And it was, it was something I don't think they saw it coming at all. I mean, I think it just completely blindsided them because, you know, our lives are going pretty well, you know, and it's not like we're getting divorced and, you know, everything's falling apart or things like that. No, yeah, we're leaving the church too. You know, I think that makes sense. I've got my sister, has been out of the church and she was, you know, where my mom was the ultimate homemaker and things like that. My sister was being the only girl out of five, you know, and four brothers. My mom really kind of lashed onto her as like, you're going to be you're going to carry on this legacy. And my sister is just that she's so strong-willed and just was not going to have any of that at all from a young age. She just really kind of rebelled. And it was, it's been nice. It's been nice talking to her about this. And she's just so grateful because she doesn't feel like she's alone in this because she had just big issues with all this feminist stuff and the way women are treated. She just did not fit in that mold and just fought it. And she's an amazing person. She lives here in Utah and she's the most Christ-like person I know. She does a lot of homeless advocacy, she's involved in a lot of other causes and things like that where she's really genuinely concerned with and genuinely, trying to help people that are marginalized and people that are, you know, that are on the fringes of society and just amazing. And that was always hard for me just seeing her and seeing her experiences and what she, you know, all the good that she was doing and trying to do and wanted to do. And yet, you know, she was drinking and, you know, doing other things and she didn't fit in the church. And I thought it was always hard for me to think just, you know, if anybody should be happy and comfortable and feel in place in the church, it would be my sister. And no, she never did. And you know, that I think that was, you know, just kind of all along the way, that's kind of been in the back of my head is just, why doesn't it work for Mindy? Why isn't she comfortable and happy as being a member of the church, as wonderful and caring and awesome a person she is? You know, it was hard to see.
Did she share her feelings with you before you left the church, or was it not until after that you learned these things?
Not really so much. I think, I don't know, I don't want to speak for the rest of my family, but I think it was always just kind of like, oh, well, Mindy's, you know, she's made bad choices. She's, you know, she's drinking and doing this, so she can't, you know. She left the church because of that. You know, that's really, I think for a while, that's kind of how I saw it.
Yeah. I did the same thing when I was active in church. It was just programmed in your head that was the only reason that people left is that they wanted to do other things. I never even considered that it was because they had legitimate reasons and strong concerns.
Yeah. Yeah. You just think it's like, well, she's doing, you know, she's doing these bad things. Are considered bad and So that's, you know, that's why she left, is because she just, she's got a problem. You know, she likes to drink or party or do this or that. And instead of really, you know, I think we do that a lot. I know I've always done that a lot, you know, with her and with other people, just looking at them and thinking, it's like, oh, they're doing this, so this is the answer. You know, they're drinking, they're doing, you know, they're living with their girlfriend or something like that. So that's why, you know, that's why they're not a member of church. Whereas that's not, you know, I think in a lot of cases, and talking to people, and that's not the real reason. It's just something. It's like, well, it's.
I've yet to meet somebody that said, I left the church so I could drink. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Well, you've been surrounded by strong women, it sounds like, including your sister and your mother and your wife, and now you're raising strong daughters.
Yeah, I hope so. It's hard, and it's hard. It's been, you know, we left right when our oldest was supposed to be starting Young Women's. And we really kind of gave her a chance. To make the choice for herself and say, you know, if you want to keep going to church and going to Young Women's, we'll support you. And she's always been a tomboy. She loves playing softball and just, you know, video games, and, you know, all her friends are boys. And do you want to go to Young Women's? She's like, no, not really. It's just, yeah, you know, it wasn't that appealing to her. And so she's happy, and it's good to see. It's hard leaving the church and just thinking, it's like, oh, you know, and that's what I think a lot of people, I know my parents are worried about it. And I know Jill's told her two sisters, she hasn't told her parents, but, you know, she's worried, you know, that they're worried about our kids, you know, what's going to happen to your kids. Mm-hmm. And it's hard raised with that mentality, you know, what's going to happen to your girls if, you know, you leave the church. You know, they need this, you know, they need the gospel in their lives, or else everything's going to fall apart. And it's hard to just really feel comfortable and feel like, it's like, yeah, you know, we can, and it's scary. It's scary to think like, yeah, you know, we have to do this kind of on our own. It's been good. We've met some good people. We've met some really good friends that we've grown really close with really fast in the last few months. You know, we're trying to get our daughters, you know, some good friends and some support and some, but still it's hard to know. My wife's been really good with our oldest too, is even before we decided to leave the church, just, you know, talking to her about, we kind of have a problem with this doctrine, or this, you know, this part of Mormon culture, or, you know, you don't have to fit this mold.
When you told your daughters they could decide if they wanted to go or not, they chose not to. Did they have any concerns about what was going to happen to their eternal family? Was that any concerns of your daughters?
Yeah, you know, and it was funny because they kind of, it was funny what really concerned them, you know, with, it's really just our oldest. Our other two are, you know, 2.5 and 4. So we haven't really talked to them about it.
Yeah.
You know, they're too young to talk to them, but your oldest, she's 12, and she knew we were drinking coffee. And, you know, we asked her, how do you feel about that? She's like, well, it doesn't really bother me or anything like that. And, you know, other things like that, that, you know, how do you feel about us not going to church, or if we don't believe this or that? And she's been fine with this. And it was funny. My wife was just, kind of on a whim out of curiosity, was looking online at tattoos, thinking about maybe getting a tattoo. You know, I don't know if she will or not, but my daughter saw her looking at this stuff and just broke down crying and was just so upset. My wife is just like, it's like, oh my God, you know, what's wrong? And she's like, I thought if you got a tattoo that you know, you can't get into heaven. We can't be together as a family forever. And it's like, wow, you know, and my wife's just like, no, I would never do anything that I, you know, she sat her down and just, I would never do anything that I honestly thought would jeopardize us, that would bring us apart at any point. You know, and it was just kind of funny that, you know, yeah, she's, you know, other things she's okay with, but yeah, you know, this one thing kind of tripped her. And that was kind of an eye opener to me as to what, you know, I think I said before, you know, I just worry about what messages my daughters are going to internalize. And you just never know what, you know, what primary lesson or Sunday school lesson or this or that, or, you know, Young Women's activity is just going to kind of sink in and just kind of, you know, they're so impressionable, and, you know, what's going to, you just worry about how they're going to view the world and what they're going to think about who they are.
As an adult, something will trigger me where I panic and think the end is coming, and then I have to talk myself down that, no, that isn't a legitimate thing, and you never know what's going to trigger you, even as an adult.
Yeah, there's still some things that I'm trying to think of an example. I can't really, but yeah, no, I have the same experience of just, you know, there's some stuff that I'll hear or, you know, something that's just like, it's like, you still just get this kind of panicky feeling of like, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, I shouldn't be doing this or shouldn't, yeah. You know, it's hard.
Well, I have trauma as a child concerning teachings of the second coming. Oh. And even now when people start talking about the second coming or in church, even before when I was an active person, I would leave the room. I just left. I just couldn't tolerate it. And it's kind of nice not to have that intrusion in my life anymore.
Yeah.
Or as much as it was. All right. Well, I did want to ask, when you made the decision not to go to church anymore, did you just stop attending or did you feel the need to make an announcement to anyone?
We just stopped attending. We'd moved into a new ward in an area where there's a lot of new homes being built and things. So it was kind of crazy. Our ward was just, you know, like the first like 4 months we were there, it doubled in size.
Wow.
And so it was just, I think it was easier just to, you know.
You were able to get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't feel any connections to the, you know, to the bishop or anything like that. And we, you know, we'd already, you know, we were already kind of, moved into our new house in August of last year. And we, I think we kind of thought it's like, well, we're going to try to give this a go and see if this, you know, see if we can, you know, keep going to church. And we went, the first Sunday we went was, it was fabulous. I mean, the sacrament reading was excellent, just very Christ-centered, very, a couple of really good talks, you know, a single sister in the ward that, you know, gave a really beautiful talk about, you know, just love and acceptance and things like that. And the bishop got up and bore his testimony at the end. And it was just like, it's like, wow, this is really, you know, this is how church should be. And then it was all downhill after that. So yeah, it's hard. And, you know, and people, oh yeah, you know, just going and hearing people just get upset about the ordained women movement or women wearing pants at church and just, you know, just saying just hurtful, you know, just awful things about people that, you know, people that I know online or in real life that are, you know, that, you know, these things are important to them and just to just hear them vilified and, or gay people, things like that, you know, just to hear that coming to church is just, it's just like, oh, you know, I can't support that. You know, it's hard. One thing that really bothered me was this, with the gay marriage, thing going on in Utah right now. Just the church's support of that is really hard. And they filed with this case that's going on in Utah right now, the church filed an amicus brief with the court, just basically kind of supporting the state and saying, it's like, yeah, you know, we support the state and keep marriage between a man and a woman. And, you know, in this amicus brief, it started off basically saying, you know, this is, you know, we're the church and we're writing this on behalf, I can't remember the exact wording, but basically said, we're writing this on behalf of, you know, these 15 million members of the church. And I thought, you know, I read that and I thought, you know, that's me, that they're saying that this is, you know, and like I said, we haven't taken our names off the church, but that's, you know, things like that are really, really make me wonder what's, you know, if that's something we should do, because just saying it's like, yeah, you know, these 15 million members, you know, Dave.
Yeah. They're lumping everyone together.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Dave thinks that, you know, Dave and these other 15 million people think that, you know, marriage should be between a man and a woman. And I don't want to be lumped in with that. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel the same way. Well, it sounds like you've been able to make the transition with your family relatively unscathed and not too much trauma.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard. It's been crazy. It was, you know, when we first decided to leave around, you know, November or so, I'm a bit overweight and it just felt like such a relief. And I lost in like 3 months, you know, I was going to the gym sporadically and I lost almost 25 pounds in 3 months because it was just felt like this huge weight had been lifted off my shoulders. And then
really,
and then since then I've gained a lot of it back because it's just, you know, things got hard and
now
it's
you're
like
comfortable.
No. It's like, well, no, it's not so much being comfortable. It's just, it's like, oh, you know, this huge weight's lifted off our shoulders. It's like, oh, I need to talk to, you know, my family's, you know, what am I going to tell my family? Oh. What am I going to, and it's hard. I'm looking for a new job. I work for my father-in-law right now, and mm-hmm. and they, my wife's parents, Jill's parents, don't know that we've left. So it's kind of hard being in that situation and just feeling like I'm not being authentic with him. But it's just the situation. We just don't feel it's the right time to talk to them about that yet. So yeah, I'm looking for a new job. So if anybody's looking for an attorney, can I make a plug
absolutely.
Like that on here?
yeah. If you need a good attorney, let me know. Yeah. I can get you in contact with Dave. Okay. That I can see how that would be stressful when you can't say what's on your mind and you feel like you have to keep part of your life private to people who are important to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a whole lot of other stuff going on with that, but it's just, it's hard. It's hard to. Yeah, I kind of kind of sense of relief and freedom that I felt those first few months when we first left, I really feel like I'll be able to get that back. But you know, right now it's just still kind of, it's hard. It's a hard time right now, you know, just feeling, I feel depressed a lot and it's, you know, it's hard to, you know, and it's hard when, you know, when work's not going well, when, you know, the business I'm working for isn't doing well to just, it's hard not to, look at it and say, it's like, well, this is, I worry about talking to my parents and saying, it's like, yeah, you know, things aren't going well at work or, you know, this or that, because, you know, I worry that they'll say, it's like, well, this is because, you know.
Oh, I know, right?
Because you left the church. Yeah. One of our good friends and they just left in January, him and his wife. He just got laid off, just this last week. It's hard not to look at that and say, it's.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's.
I felt that way. Yeah. I know many people who are afraid if anything goes wrong, people are like, see?
Yep.
That's what happens. Yeah. You leave the church.
Yeah. But if we were in the church and things went wrong, then God would just be giving us trials or you know, something like
tested.
That. Yeah. It was funny. I think it was like the Tempe. I don't know what temple it is. A temple down in Arizona where I saw something on Facebook where everybody had been praying for this temple dedication that it wouldn't rain.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, everybody was just, you know, fervently praying that it wouldn't rain and, you know, and then it rained. And then you see these people posting on Facebook. It's like, oh, you know, it was just such a miracle that it rained because, you know, our children, you know, the weather was so bad. Our children will never forget this. And it's just, I just kind of look at that and think it's like, you know, what scenario is there where this isn't,
You can twist things any way you want them to be.
Yeah.
But sometimes bad things just happen. That's all.
It's hard to just kind of feel alone in the universe. You know, it's church is comforting in a lot of ways. You know, it's nice to feel like, yeah, I've got, you know, heavenly parents that are looking out for me. There's this plan for me. There's, you know, all the things, my patriarchal blessing that it's hard to leave that. It's hard to step away from all that. And this is my wife and I both say this is the hardest thing we've ever done is mm-hmm. leaving the church. I mean, it's not. And I just look back and think, you know, before I would just take that for, you know, just look at people that left and think it's like, oh, you know, they're weak or mm-hmm. they're, you know, they just don't understand, you know, they're weak or stupid. They don't understand or they don't, you know, they're just, you know, it's some flaw with them and, you know, they're basically taking the easy way out. You know, it's not like that. It's hard. It's very hard.
Do you ever have those moments, like you said, you've struggled with depression. So if you're feeling depressed, do you ever have a moment where you think, I'm feeling this way. It's from God telling me I've chosen the wrong direction. Do you have ever?
Yeah, I used to. I'm past that now. And just the shame. And I remember telling my wife a while ago, it's just like, you know, just as far as like shame and things like that go, it's, you know, it's, I still get depressed and things like that. But as far as feeling ashamed of things I do or who I am, it's just, I'm just done with that. I just can't, you know, it's just, no, I'm done with that. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna live my life that way anymore.
Well said. All right. Anything you want to say in closing?
Oh, I'm just grateful for my daughters. One thing that when I got married and we started having kids, I always, I wanted to have girls because, you know, I thought about the problems that I had growing up and the, you know, the things that I thought from, of being a man that were just, you know, just inherently, you know, like there was something inherently wrong with me just because, you know, unhealthy attitudes about sex and things like that. And being interested in feminism and listening to those things, it's just like, it's, you know, it's so, I mean, you know, you hear it a lot that, you know, patriarchy hurts men and women. And it's true. It's just, you know, it's so good to just feel like it's like, oh, you know, I'm okay. I'm all right. I always want, you know, I wanted to have a girl with our first child. I was excited when she was a girl. And I don't think I would have been disappointed if we had a son, but you know, I always felt like I was always kind of relieved when it was like, oh, you know, we're having another girl, because I didn't want to have a son that would experience the same pain and frustrations and things that I had felt growing up. And, you know, a few months ago I stopped and I thought, I mean, we're done having kids, you know, but for the first time in my life, I don't want to say I had regret, but I felt like it's like, you know, it would have been okay if we had a boy, you know, it would have been okay. You know, I would have been able to help him and teach him and give him a better, happier life than what I had. And with less, you know, without all the shame and without all the, feelings of, you know, inadequacy and feelings of, you know, self-loathing and things like that. So it was, for a while I thought it's like, well, you know, a big part of why I'm leaving is because of my girls, and I don't want them to, you know, they're not going to have the same experience that I did growing up. And, you know, I want them to, you know, I don't want them to be a part of a church that treats them as, you know, second-class citizens in so many ways. But, you know, at that moment, you know, I really kind of felt like, you know, I think I'd be making the same decision. You know, I've wondered, would I be making the same decision if I had sons instead of daughters? Would this stuff have even registered with me? Would I have worried about how my sons were going to grow up the same way I'm worried about how my girls are going to grow up and what they're going to learn? And, you know, I finally thought it's like, well, you know, it's, even if I had sons, I don't know if the way I would have looked at things would have been the same, but I would be making the same choice right now. I think, you know, I think we're doing the right thing for our girls. I think if we had boys, we'd be doing the right thing for our boys by leaving. It was good to feel like, I think it was just very healing to just feel like, it's like, yeah, you know, it would have been okay to have a son. It would have been okay to have a son because I'm okay, because I'm a good person. There's not, you know, there's not something wrong with me as a male. There's not, you know, there's not something that's just defective with me or wrong with me. And I would have been able to teach my son that and give that to him. I'm grateful for my girls. I'm so grateful for my wife and my family and my girls, but we're doing the right thing. And I'm grateful that we're out. It's hard, but I'm grateful that we're out. I think we're going to be happy. I think it's going to keep getting better.
Nice. Well, your girls are lucky to have you for their daddy.
I hope so.
And it sounds like your wife, I haven't met your wife, but I'm sure she feels the same way.
I hope so.
From all the nice things you said about her.
She's amazing. She's really amazing. And just watching the way she's blossomed and grown and just become such an incredible person. It's just, yeah, I can't say enough about her.
Great. Well, thank you, Dave. I appreciate you taking time today.
Yeah,
and
thanks for having
me.
About
feminism from the male's point of view.
Well, I don't always get everything right with feminism.
Does anybody?
No, but it's just been such a huge eye opener to me, and it's been great. It's just been, you know, I've learned so much about myself by listening to women. It's been a good experience.
Nice. Well, thank you, and thank you to our listeners of Mormon Expression Voices. Feel free to join us online at MormonExpressions.com. And if you'd like to have an interview, we would love to hear from you. You can email me at voices@MormonExpression.com. And also please take time to see what Whitefields is doing as far as therapy and other resources for people who are going through a faith transition, no matter what that transition may be. So thank you, everyone. Have a good day. Bye.
Trying to